The Moonman Clan, Case 7, Chow Chow's Bowl Washing. Introduction. When food comes, stuff the mouth. When sleep comes, close the eyes. When washing your face, rub your nose. When taking off straw sandals, touch your feet. At such times, if you miss it, take a light and search hard in the deep of night. Did you find it? The main case. A monk approached Chow Chow and said, "I am a new student. I have just entered a monastery. Please teach me." Chow Chow said, "Have you had breakfast?" The monk said, "Yes." Chow Chow said, "Wash your bowls." Reflections. Chow Chow is one of the Zen ancestors to whom I feel particularly close. I feel close to him because he began Zen practice in his later years, as I did. Also, he wrote a poem that resonates in my bones. The cock crows in the early morning. Sadly, I see as I rise how worn out I am. I haven't a belt or a shirt, just a semblance of a robe. My loincloth has no seat. My pants, no opening. On my head are 3 or 5 pecks of gray ashes. Originally, I intended to practice to help save others. Who would have suspected that instead I would become a fool? Chow Chow, the great Zen master. His formal name was Kunshin. Chow Chow is the name of a small town not far from Peking, where he spent his old age and from which he is named. In Japanese, his name is Joshu Jushin. His dates were 778-897. He lived to be 120 years old. He studied with Nanchuan. Nanchuan is a famous Zen master presented in the koan about the cat, where the two groups of monks were fighting over the cat. After Nanchuan's death, Chow Chow went on pilgrimage throughout China. Before departing, he made a famous statement. He said that if he were to meet a child of 3 years old who could teach him, he would become the child's pupil. And if he were to meet someone over 100 years old whom he could teach, then he would teach that person. It was not until Chow Chow was around 80 that he settled at the Kuan Yin Monastery in the eastern suburb of Chow Chow. It is said that he was extremely ascetic in his habits. During the 40 years of his abbotship, he did not install a single piece of new furniture, nor did he write a single fundraising letter to any patron to ask for money. Chow Chow was a man who was very modest, very kind, very simple, self-abnegating and an ascetic. He knows his own self and is not timorous to present it at the appropriate time. Yet he does not push himself forward in order to gain fame or glory or recognition. He uses simple language, language not fettered with Buddhist clichés, language that does not begin or end with words. Silence is also the language of Chow Chow, as well as simple actions. He is not interested in figura, or the presentation he makes. He is not interested in fine robes, brocade roxus, silk kesas, fancy furniture. When the leg of a chair breaks, a piece of firewood will do for its replacement. He is totally devoid of pride in his accomplishments or achievements in Zen. A wonderful story illustrates this. Someone asked Chow Chow, "Being on the verge, that point of absolute immediacy, what is it like?" Chow Chow said, "Pissing is a small thing to do. but I have to do it myself. He is open to the learning he can receive from others, no matter who, male or female, young or old, Buddhist or non-Buddhist. Whoever and whatever can teach him, he will receive their learning. And likewise, he's open to teach anyone who is willing and interested in learning from him. He is not interested in theological speculation, nor is he interested in sham, and exposes it as such directly and immediately. However, he does it with kindness. No 30 blows from Chow Chow. No shouting of obscenities. This is Chow Chow. I hope get to know, respect, and love him as I do. Your association with this great Zen master will enrich you. I have just entered the monastery. You have anything? Please, master, what can you teach me? Here I am, teach me. Do you have anything to eat yet? Yes, I've eaten, and I'm finished. Then go wash your bowls. Let's look at this student monk and enter into him. Let's see what's going on inside of him. He comes to the Chow Chow's monastery. Here's my take on his state of mind. I'm going to find old Master Chow Chow and show him how accomplished I am. I've been through koan study, passed all of my koans with flying colors. I've had Kensho dozens of times. I know the sutras backwards and forwards. I've been asked to give Dharma talks. And look how responsible I am. At this point, I would like you to spend in the next few minutes thinking about your own wonderful strengths, achievements, and accomplishments. Such examples could be, I run the Zendo. I'm the best chanter ever. I have a mala or rosary with me wherever I go. I've memorized a Heart Sutra both in English and Japanese. I never miss Mass. I never miss a single time to do the daily office. Nobody does a Jikido meditation monitor as well as I do. I ask the tough questions everybody else is afraid to ask, and I keep Margaret and Steph on their toes all the time. I give beginning meditation instruction to newcomers, and boy, am I good at it. I can chant the lineage, the list of Zen ancestors beginning with Shakyamuni, 88 generations down to myself without making a mistake. I've got a PhD in religion, philosophy, mathematics, literature, psychology, music, biology, or fill in the blank. We're dealing with the archetype of the self-satisfied smug, the archetype of the heavenly being. The old Buddhas described 6 major realms of being. They are known as the realms of existence. These realms are psychological states through which we transmigrate constantly. They are archetypes. The first is the hell dwellers. It's a state where the energy is so intense that we don't know if we control the energy or it controls us. So intense that paranoia develops. And when we strike out against ourselves. It's a state of intense hatred. Shakyamuni talked of hatred and anger, the second of the 3 poisons, greed, anger, and ignorance. He said, it's like picking up a flaming hot coal with our bare hand and throwing it at someone. We always end up burning ourselves. We want to destroy what we hate and destroy ourselves. We want to escape from the intense anger we feel. But there's nowhere to turn. Our very selves haunt us. This is hell. It's a state where nothing goes right. We wake up in the morning and see everything as awful, dismal. Then we have the hungry ghosts. These are beings that are condemned by their evil deeds to suffer constant, unappeasable hunger and thirst, a state of intense greed, a state where we already have everything we want, don't have to have anything else, but we're still hungry. We still want more. A state of insatiable, unquenchable need. Whatever is done to alleviate it is never enough. It's a state where we suck the life juices of whoever tries to feed us, whether with compassion, advice, love, money, sex, or whatever. It's never enough. And the one who tries to give to a hungry ghost always ends up feeling violated, raped, sucked dry. The third state is the state of animals or beasts. It's a joyous existence, blind stupidity and ignorance, ruled entirely by desire and lust. Even parents and children harm one another. The instincts and passions rule without regard to any other consideration, such as love, morality, feelings, and priorities of others. It's sex without love, eating without appreciation. There's no joy, and worse, no humor. Then we have the fighting spirits. These are beings that live in perpetual strife. It's a realm of envy and jealousy, survival of the fittest, winner take all and loser be damned, always with a chip on the shoulder, always taking offense at whatever is said, suspicious, angry, provocative. We're the one in the fast lane, and you better not slow me down or be in my way, because I've got to be first. Then we have the humans. The human state is the springboard to all the other realms. We are constantly slipping into and out of each realm. A harsh word, and we stand in danger of becoming a fighting demon. Dissatisfaction with a meal placed before us, and we can become a hungry ghost. Continuing and intensifying our dissatisfaction may lead us to the realm of hell dwellers. What is particularly wonderful about the human realm is that it contains the possibility of a religious aspiration for enlightenment. It is the state where we can become the Buddha, where we can receive and become the sacraments, where we can become Christ. Finally, we come to the heavenly beings. In this realm, we see the archetype of our self-satisfied, smug monk. This realm includes virtuous people, sages, bodhisattvas, and all the new converts, from smokers to non-smokers, from alcoholics to non-alcoholics, from whatever to Catholic, from meat eaters to vegetarians, from whatever to Zen. The tip-off is that these new converts suddenly become intolerant of those still afflicted with what they left behind. And they have a zeal for their newfound state of perfection that is unbearable to the rest of us. People in this realm live in constant happiness and know no suffering. Everything goes well. They also have no awakening and are without religious aspiration, because they already have reached nirvana. They are enlightened, and they've done it on their own. They are the self-developed person. In this realm, we spend countless hours developing our bodies to become beautiful and shapely, dieting so that we can slip into a number 8 dress rather than a 12. So that we can wear size 28 trousers rather than 42. We take delight in our health, great pride in our accomplishments. We're satisfied with our achievements. We're intoxicated by our ego. The mirror, mirror on the wall always declares us to be the fairest of them all. We thank the gods for what we are, that we are not like them. We are content. Ours is the perfect marriage. Our income is great. We have a beautiful, spacious house in a select suburb with an outdoor butane barbecue. Barbie doll, perfect children, none of whom are into drugs. What could be sweeter? How lucky I am. This is the archetype of the self-satisfied smug. Sadly, the smug, in one way or another, is in each of us. That's the way archetypes work. We all have them. Each one of us is the student monk. So, Grandpa Chaucho, here I am, a brilliant student. What more can you teach me? Chaucho knows he's dealing with an archetype, knows the archetype is deep, deep in the mind, deep in the consciousness, and deep in the personality of the monk standing before him. He knows the trouble with archetypes is that they are not devils that can be exorcised and got rid of. They are always there. It's like too much salt in the soup. You can never really get rid of the taste of all the salted soup. You've got a major problem. There are all sorts of things you can try, like adding more water, or milk, or flour, or pepper. All attempts to lessen the sharpness of the salty taste. Sometimes you can succeed, but rarely satisfactorily. Each of us has salt in the soup of our being. Some have more than others. Chaucho is faced with a student with too much salt. Can he make the appropriate corrections to take away the over-salted taste? He knows it's difficult, if not an impossible job. He also knows that one thing he must not do is add more salt. This student monk is already over-educated. He knows all about Zen, all about the history of comparative religions, all about the sutras, the ancestors, all the holy books. He knows too much. He needs to unknow. So Chaucho tests the student monk to see just how salty smug he is. Did you finish your gruel? The monk hears, have you finished all your training as a Zen monk? Or he hears, have you completed koan study? Or he hears, have you experienced kensho, an intense realization? Or he hears, have you mastered the sutras? The monk answers, yes, I have, thinking perhaps now Chaucho will acknowledge my achievements. Maybe Chaucho will initiate me into the esoteric teachings of Zen. Why, maybe I can even become his successor. Chaucho says, then wash your bowls. With that response, Chaucho cuts through the presumptive, salty smugness of the monk. This manda or dialogue between student and master reminds me of my childhood. Whenever I would presume to enter into grown-up conversation or venture an opinion on subjects which were beyond me, or whenever I put on airs with my education and book knowledge, which was greater than my father's, my father would make a sharp and ironic response. He would say, "Va lavati le mani," go wash your hands. Or more expressively, "Va studio tuo culo," go wipe your ass. Papa's meaning was always clear. A sharp put down of a snot-nosed kid. First, experience life for yourself, and then you can talk about it. First, learn the alphabet of ordinary common sense living, and then you can spout your book knowledge. But right now, you stink of presumption, and your ass needs wiping. Chaucho is equally sharp. His response turns us inside. Right here, now, it's not the learning of sutras, the passing of koans, the countless repetitions of prayers, the Nembutsu, recitation of Buddha's name, or the Jesus prayer, the rosaries, the masses, the sacraments. It's the ground beneath our feet. It's the food we eat as we eat it. It's the eating. It's the hands we wash. It's the washing. It's doing what we are doing when we are doing it. When food comes, we eat. I had an experience of this once in the bakery of the Zazen community. At that time, the monks and staff were the workers of the bakery. Every now and then, after a too big order, the entire community had to get down to the bakery and work in order to fulfill that order. Sometimes we would work past midnight. On one of these occasions, Roshi, Bernie, and I were assigned to a huge sink and had to wash a mountain of baking trays. I watched Bernie wash. He was slow and totally unconcerned with the mountain of trays. He simply picked off one from the top and carefully, completely washed, washing with no other thought than to wash. He was sweating profusely. His clothes were stained with his sweat. He didn't seem to notice. I was thinking of how many damn trays there were and how long it would take to do them all. At the rate he was going, we would be there all night. He washed the trays, fed them to me, and I dried them. I had to patiently wait for him to finish another tray before I could wipe. He just continued, unconcerned with the time, with the number of trays he had before him, with the sweat rolling down his face, seeping into his clothes. He was so slow. Something had to be done. So I subtly suggested that we switch places. This way, I thought to myself, I could smash through and get the job done. Then we could go back to the monastery and get into bed. He cheerfully accepted my offer and switched to drying. Then, during my speed demon tray washing, I happened to glance at Roshi. And there he was, unconcernedly drying, tray after tray, carefully, as if each one was a precious jewel, completely absorbed in drying. He was the act of drying. He was drying, drying dried. The trick is to be completely there. The trick is to do one thing. The trick is to be one thing. The trick is to be present wherever you are. The trick is to be present. A monk approached Chaucho and said, "I am a new student. I have just entered the monastery. Please teach me." Chaucho said, "Have you had breakfast?" The monk said, "Yes." Chaucho said, "Wash your bowls."